Stephen, to begin with, and for those who are who don't know you, would you please introduce yourself? Just a few words on who you are and what you're doing.
Sure. Well, my name is Stephen Downs. As you know, I live in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada, which is on the eastern side of Canada. I work with our national research organization called the National Research Council, and I specialize in the field of e-learning and new media and that sort of thing. And that job basically consists of doing research in the area, doing some writing, some talking in the area, and writing the occasional piece of software.
Okay. Today you want to talk a little bit about, I think, a huge learning adventure that started just a week ago. It's an online course on connectivism and connective knowledge, and facilitated by you and George Siemens. You've called it an MOOC, a massive open online course. What does that mean, and what was your motivation to start it?
Well, the motivation to start the course was twofold. First of all, to actually talk about connectivism and work out for ourselves implications and aspects of the theory, but also too, we wanted to demonstrate the principle in action, and we were motivated by the offering some previous open courses, David Wiley's open course, for example, yeah. Or Alec Koros's course in Saskatchewan. The massive part happened by accident. We've got some like 2,200 people now. You don't set out looking for 2,200 people to join your course. But we set it up in such a way that people could organize their own participation in the course according to their own needs and their own interests and their own technology. And I think that made the course a lot more accessible for people. Consequently, they were more inclined to join it.
So the massive came by accident.
Yes, no question about it.
Okay. The main topic of the course is connectivism. And what was the reason to choose this topic? And why should it be discussed from your point of view?
Well, George and I are two of the leading proponents of connectivism, if I may say so. The term connectivism itself was coined by George in a paper he wrote 4 years ago called Connectivism. And basically, it's a theory that proposes that knowledge and learning operate according to network principles and take place inside a network. And so we wanted to talk about this idea. It's an idea that we've both talked about a lot on our blogs and in our other writings, but we haven't offered in a formal, structured way. It's so much as you can offer these sorts of ideas in a formal, structured way. So we wanted to pursue it in that way.
Okay, thank you. Would you like something to add, or?
Nope, go ahead.
Okay. How do you make use of new technologies, especially Web 2.0, during the course?
Well, the idea of a connectivist course is that everybody chooses their own technology, and the course itself is created through the connections between the individual people. So what's happened is people have either individually or as small communities opted whatever sort of technology that they wanted, and we're bringing it all together. So a large number of people are using their own weblogs to post things. So I aggregated about, looked like about 50 posts that were written in the last 24 hours, for example. A number of other people have set up their own Facebook group and are working on it through Facebook. Yet another group, the Chilbo Online Community, have set up a Second Life area. And so they have a connectivism community established in Second Life, and there's about 50 or so of them. There's yet another group of about 80 or 90 people who have set up in Google Groups, and they're doing it that way. There's yet another group who have set up on the Moodle. We have a course Moodle, and quite a number of people are using that. And I could go on. I could go on for quite a while listing these things. The core of the course, if you will, I mean, it's kind of loose to call it that. On the one hand, there's the wiki, which basically describes what George and I will be talking about, and people can pay attention to us or not. That's their choice, and some choose not to. The other side of it is the what we call the daily, which is very similar to my OL Daily online newsletter. And basically what that does is it uses software that aggregates the posts and the comments and that are being made out there around the internet, brings them together, and then sends them out to subscribed participants.
Okay. Did you get any feedback from participants as they are trying to get some orientation or to trying to keep up with all the activities? Is it possible for someone to follow all these tracks?
Well, this is just that we don't want people to follow all these tracks. And yeah, I mean, you know, 2,200 people, we get nothing but feedback. you know, and a lot of people expressed the thought, you know, that they were overwhelmed. And yes, yeah. It's. But the thing is, this, and both George and I are quite clear about this. We don't expect, and we don't want people to do all the readings in the course, to read all the comments, to go to all the places. That's not the way connectivist learning works. What we want people to do is to find the technology and to find the content that makes sense to them, the content that is the most use to them, the content that's the most comfortable to them, and participate that way, reading just part of what's there and making their contributions based on those readings of the part of what's there. The idea here is you don't assimilate the whole, you don't become the whole. In a connectivist course, each person plays a part in the network, and they contribute their own unique perspective, their own unique point of view. Autonomy and diversity are watchwords in connectivist learning.
So it's a very open and together and also personal environment, if I understand.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Together with George, you are facilitating this course. What does it mean? Could you describe your role as a moderator, facilitator, or whatever, a little bit?
Well, I think I'd say I have, and this will be true of George, kind of a twofold role. One role is the role of technician. The Grasshopper software I authored myself, and so I have to fiddle around making sure that it's harvesting properly, that it's sending out the newsletter properly, and things like that. And George similarly is fiddling around with the Moodle and fiddling around with the wiki, just making sure that these bits of technology work. The other part is to act as a participant in the course, and because it's a course and we're instructors, it's sort of like a privileged participation, more privileged than I'm really comfortable with, but that's the way we've set it up, and I think that's the way people are comfortable. And so what we're doing is, on a weekly basis, we begin the week with a contribution, either a video or a document or something like that, just something to get the discussion moving. This is in addition to the readings that we've selected. On Wednesday, we have a synchronous session on Illuminate, and yes, we get dozens and dozens, and we'll probably get hundreds in the future, of people in the Illuminate session. Illuminate, if you're not familiar with it, is a synchronous conferencing tool. It allows us to have audio communication and to share slides and other resources. So we do that on Wednesday, and the plan is to bring in guests on Wednesday. We had Alec Koros on last Wednesday. And then on Friday, we have a Skype conversation, which is moderated by Dave Cormier from EdTech Talk. And this is broadcast out on Ustream, ustream.tv. And it's right now audio-only broadcast, but we may do a video broadcast by the end of the course. And so everybody in the course can listen to this Ustream broadcast. Okay. And then there's the gathering of links and the highlighting and the sending out of OL Daily, or of the daily, and just the day-to-day sort of stuff. That gives you an idea of the role.
Thank you very much. It's impressive. Sometimes do people look at you as being a kind of a teacher, something you probably don't want to be?
Well, yeah, I think you know, people sign up for a course, even if they're not paying for it, even if it's an open course, they follow pretty naturally and easily into roles. And one of the roles that people fall into is student teacher, right? So there's a significant number of people who are looking at us that way. I think by the end of the course, that they'll discover that they've created their own learning. But for now, they're still sort of looking to us for guidance, and we're trying to tell them, look, find your own way. But we'll show you. I mean, and that's part of the role here too. We're not telling them so much, but we're attempting to model and to demonstrate practice inside a connectivist environment. And so, you know, I mean, there is a sense, you know, like teachers in a connectivist course don't become suddenly non-experts, and they don't suddenly become, you know, non-participants standing off to the side. You know, we take part in this, and we model, you know, connective behavior.
Okay. That's very interesting. Could you tell us a little bit about the feedback from the participants you've got so far?
Well, the feedback has been all over the map, as you might suggest. I've gotten a lot of, you know, personal emails and comments saying, you know, the nice things like, you're doing a great job, keep it up, which is always nice to hear.
Okay.
The ever-present comment, you know, the amount of information is just overwhelming, I don't know when I'll find time to sleep, sort of thing. We've gotten people who've joined the course and who are very critical of connectivism, and so you know, we get our daily dose of skepticism and criticism, which I think again in a crowd this size is to be anticipated. We've gotten a lot of people are taking off with the concept and are creating their own things. We've got people who, one person created a diagram showing how all the different elements of the course are linked together. Other people are creating network diagrams of Twitter interactions in the course. Other people have been creating Wordle diagrams, and that's Wordle is an application that analyzes the words that are used in a document and then creates what's called a word cloud, highlighting the words that are used most frequently in the course.
Okay.
You know, so there's been a lot of creativity expressed as well, and that's the stuff that's most interesting to me.
It sounds incredible. Another point, as far as I can see, this online course is a real global experience. You've mentioned thousands of participants and translation and local communities. Did you expect, or you and George, this level of awareness and response?
The global audience, I'm not surprised about. Both George and I have our own online mailing lists. I have OL Daily, which goes out to, I don't know, 10,000 people or so a day. And we have a global audience now for the stuff that we do.
Okay.
And we read, you know, we read from a global content base. We read stuff from all over the world. And there is this global community, so it's not surprising at all that a certain proportion of those people would join the course. And it's distributed in the way you would expect, right? The more industrialized, the more technological nations have a greater representation, and we're still lagging in some areas. Participation from Africa is very weak, and participation from South America is not as strong as we would like, although there is a very good participation from South America compared to what it might have been a couple of years ago even.
Okay. What has been the most challenging part in the project so far? From your point of view.
Yeah. Well, from my point of view, making my software work. because this software that I'm using is called Grasshopper. I created it for my own purposes, to serve my own newsletter and my own website. It was never intended to support an online course, and now it's being used to support an online course, and it's pretty good for that sort of thing. It's not like a learning management system where everybody comes to you. It's like a personal learning environment where you go to everyone else. So that's fine, but you know, I've had to do things like, you know, mass uploads of student accounts, for example, is one thing, and set up the feed aggregator and that, and so it's occupied time. So technically, it's been a challenge. The other challenge, I think, has been making this concept clear. Connectivism is a very difficult theory to explain, particularly to explain in a context where people are coming from a different set of presumptions. Connectivism does not deal with simple cause and effects relations, for example. You don't just manipulate one variable and get one result. Even the terms and the definitions are not clear because we're not based in, how do I want to describe this? I certainly don't believe that knowledge is a linguistic construct, which means that statements of knowledge aren't propositions, and that means that you don't get nice, clear, true, false statements, because statements just don't work that way in connectivism. Statements are always abstract. Statements are always informed by the context in which they are uttered. And you know, making all of this sort of stuff accessible to people is difficult. It's a difficult course to teach at, and what we're teaching it at is basically a first-year level. It's a very difficult course to teach at a first-year level because there hasn't been the background of experiences with these concepts. But we had to start somewhere.
Okay. With regard to the technical points you've mentioned, have you ever thought about using Moodle, for example, as the background technology?
We have a Moodle set up and running.
I remember, yeah.
Those people who want to use Moodle can. Okay. We decided not to put course materials in Moodle, mostly because our own materials, George's materials and my materials, are also scattered all over the web. George, for example, put up a video on Blip. Last week he used Google Docs, and last week I put up a video on Ustream. So Moodle wouldn't really serve our purposes.
Okay. Last question, Stephen. When would you call the project successful or a success?
Well, in a sense, it's already a success. Over the first week, we've proven that this can be done. And that might sound like a trivial point. Well, of course it can be done. But you know, it's like one of these things. Before we did it, a lot of people said, well, you can't really do this. A course would never work if you taught it that way. It would be utterly hopeless. Well, we've gone through a week. We still have most of the students. We've had literally thousands of comments flying back and forth. People have learned things, and they've demonstrated that learning in their own postings, their own blog posts, and their own creations. And I think at the end of 12 weeks, we're going to have a substantial body of evidence documenting the learning that has taken place. And this evidence won't be, you know, simple industrial age test scores. This evidence is going to be in the form of their creations, of their conversations, of their postings. And that evidence will be the evidence of the success of this course. And for my own part, personally, the course will be a success if it advances my own understanding of connectivism, because again, that's why I'm offering this course, is to advance my own understanding, to take the concept, to, if you will, temper the concept in a very vigorous online discussion with many points of view. And you know, already I've seen evidence that my understanding of connectivism is being deepened, and I think after 12 months it'll be substantially deepened, and that will be, for me, personal evidence of the success of the course.
I think that it sounds great. It can be done. I think that's a very, very important message and experience. Just one more question. Did you change any of your activities or rearranged any of your personal schedule with regard to your participation in conferences or in dealing with newsletters or something else? Did you rearrange your schedule for the time of the course?
Not a whole lot. A little bit, very loosely. The daily newsletter comes out in the morning, so usually when I wake up in the morning, I work on OL Daily, and now I wake up in the morning, I work on the daily for this course, and all of my work on OL Daily takes place in the afternoon. There's been a bit of an impact on that. On Wednesdays and Fridays, I have to allocate about an hour for each of the online sessions. I'm doing a lot of reading, but I always do a lot of reading, so it's not as time-consuming as you might expect, and especially once we both, George and I, both get into the routine of this, it's not going to take nearly as much time as you might think teaching 2,200 students is going to take. And George spent the entire first week of the course in England giving talks, touring around, and he participated just fine. And I expect to spend next week in San Jose. Same story. So it has an impact on us, but it hasn't dominated our lives.
Okay. Thank you very much, Stephen. Thank you very much for your time, your answers, and insights into at least from my point of view, very, very interesting and unusual project. And I think the good message is it's still open for everyone, as far as I can see. So it will be run until the 1st of December or first week of December, is that right?
Yeah, I forget exactly what the closing date is, but we're just starting week two in a 12-week course.
Okay, so thank you very much once again. I know you're very busy, so I'm looking forward to the Scope conference in Heidelberg in October, when we will have another opportunity to spend some time with you.
Yeah.
Yep. So thank you very much.
I forget exactly what date it is, but yes, I am looking forward to it. It's the far future for me.
Okay, it will be in October, the first week of October. I think the first or the third. I think the first of October. Okay, thank you very much, Stephen, and see you at the Scope in October.
Thanks a lot. See you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.